Moni Finegar is joining me. She is the author of The Woman in the Photograph, The Search for My Mother's Past. Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you, Liz.
So there's a photograph right on the cover of the book. Two beautiful young women. Who are they?
Those two women are my mother on the right and her sister on the left. Beautifully, beautifully dressed in such elegant gowns and jewels, so poised. And it's a photograph that my mother never showed me. A photograph from a time in her life she never said one word about. After my mother passed away, my brother had boxes of her stuff he had collected, and we were looking for some papers, and I came across an envelope with this photograph. And as I say in the book, I literally gasped. I looked at the photograph, and my first thought was, the woman in this photograph is not my mother. I mean, I knew she was my mother, but I also knew she was a very different person from the woman I knew.
And what year approximately was that photograph taken?
Almost everything I'm going to tell you, I figured out over 20 years, that the photograph had to have been taken toward the end of 1932. My mother, Alice, would have been 18, and it would have been literally just months before Hitler became Chancellor of Germany.
And where was it taken?
It was definitely taken in Leipzig, Germany, where they lived, and there's an imprint from a photographer in Leipzig on the back corner of this sepia-toned photo.
And you say that when you looked at this photograph, you knew it was your mom, but you're thinking, man, that's not my mom. Tell me about your mom, the one that you grew up with here in the United States.
Yes, in New York. I was very close to my mother, even closer than some children might be, because my father had died when I was 8. And so my mother really bonded with me. And I knew her to be smart and resilient in certain ways, but I also knew her to be a person who was struggling to survive at every moment, a woman who really didn't have the means to support my brother and me for most of my childhood, someone who pushed herself out the door in the morning to ride the New York subway in the rush hour and taught herself shorthand, squashed between people, and who came home at night so exhausted that she took no interest in dinner or, most of all, I guess what struck me was she was a person who seemed to have lost her optimism about life. And I think as a child, I wouldn't have worded it that way. But in all my search, what came to be the most important is my realizing that's what was different. The woman I knew had lost her confidence in life, had lost her trust in life, didn't have dreams. And the woman in this photograph clearly had both confidence and dreams.
One might say zest for life.
Yes.
You did not grow up with that woman. You grew up with someone who was just trying to go day to day to make ends meet.
This is the truth.
Was it like that your whole childhood? Did it get better at any point?
It got financially better. I realized so many things in hindsight. When I was 13, my mother remarried, and I guess the terminology is a marriage of convenience. The house we were living in was being sold, and all of a sudden she announced she was marrying a man I had never met. And I guess financially, we got to move to Manhattan, to Central Park West.
That's very fancy, isn't it?
It was very fancy. I could look out the window and see the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade floats go by. But there was really no home for me there. I really didn't have a place where I felt I belonged. Though believe me, I loved New York. I loved being in Manhattan after my early years in Queens, and I still love New York. But there was absolutely no place for me. And as I tell in the book, something came up in that relationship with the man she married, who I would never call a stepfather. He didn't mean any harm. He just knew nothing about children and human beings. And I tried to reach out to my mother, and she said to me, "You have no idea how hard it is for me. I can't do anything about it." And at that point, I realized how completely helpless she was, and I needed to get out of there.
So at that point, did you feel, I'm on my own here?
I think I felt that all my childhood, and certainly I left home at 16. And yet, it's such a mix of things. I hope in reading this book, readers realize how much I loved my mother and how much I felt loved by my mother, that she gave me something that, as I learned from her story, she didn't get. So it's never been a lack of love, but I definitely felt on my own to figure out life. And I knew I didn't want to come to the same conclusions she had come to.
Moni Fenniger is my guest. Her book is The Woman in the Photograph, The Search for My Mother's Past. At 16, where does someone go? And I know you did go to college in Michigan. So point A to point B.
Well, I guess, it's kind of good news, bad news. Through several mishaps, I ended up being 2 years younger than anybody else in my senior class. I think it was one move too many where they put me in the wrong grade, or however it happened, I did go off to the University of Michigan. And as I say somewhere in the book, for the subsequent years, I was a wandering seeker of the 60s. I went to college. I took some time off. I traveled in Europe. I went back to college. I went to the Bank Street College of Education and spent some time teaching first grade in the South Bronx. But mostly I wandered, trying to find my place in the scheme of things. That took a while for me to find. And I probably felt when I moved to Berkeley like I had at least found my home, but I still had no roots.
But you've gone on to have a family and kids, and then all of a sudden you find this photograph, now it's the time to go back and search. Or do you think you always had that longing to figure out your mom?
I would say I wanted nothing to do with her past, and I had spent too much time trying to figure out my mom as a child, and I wanted out. I really left home, and I really didn't want to know anything about her past, nor had she ever given me any indication I'd want to know about it. So in my imagination, I didn't know how good it was or how terrible it was. I just knew I wanted nothing to do with it. And yet, like all our lives, we think it's an individual life, but we're always in partnership with history. And I think that's what's interesting about the book. And I know that's what I love about memoirs, to see the dance between your own life and where history intervened. And in my case, history intervened the night that the Berlin Wall came down.
Explain that.
Well, I was sitting in the living room in Berkeley with my husband, Michael, and all of a sudden, Tom Brokaw came on the news and said, this night, this momentous thing has happened. The people were singing and chanting and hammering away at the wall with their bare hands. And I heard the German voices and I started sobbing. And it was very confusing to me because I kind of grew up with an aversion to anything German, since my understanding was my parents had barely escaped from Hitler. And yet I felt like I was one of those people. I felt like I was the young woman with the long hair climbing up on the gate that night on the Brandenburg Gate. I felt so called, but I didn't understand why. And then about a year later, when Germany was reunified, I got a call from my brother saying there was a property in Leipzig that had been stolen from my mother's family by the Nazis. And we were entitled to some restitution or some claim to that property. And all of a sudden, it clearly got my attention. And that's part of what precipitated my going to my brother's house and our sorting through papers and finding that photograph. So it was in the early 90s that history called to me and the photograph.
You got the photograph and the wheels start turning. You can clearly see from the photograph this was your mom, but it wasn't your mom. Mm-hmm. So you start thinking about this. Tell us a little bit about the beginning of this journey to find out more about her.
Well, it started very slowly. I am sorry to say her sister was no longer alive, and there were not a host of relatives that I could ask. In fact, there were some relatives in other places in the world, but I didn't know who they were. So in the beginning, I got some documents, and the documents had the names of my grandparents, who were the owners of the property. And in a way, that was the beginning. And I looked at these names that I didn't know. I knew my grandfather was a dentist. And suddenly, these people who I knew nothing about were not anonymous. They had names. Their names were Nellie and Max, and they had birth dates and death dates, though I didn't know how they died. I had always assumed they were in that sort of dark shadow called the Holocaust. But it turns out that's actually not what happened to them. So I had one uncle and a cousin of my mother's that I could start asking questions between the documents that were coming through the lawyer that he was unearthing. I mean, there was one document that was singed along the edges because it had been burned in some fire during some of the bombings of Germany. And these two people who are no longer alive today, but were then, I started piecing together the personal story and even beginning to find out what relatives I would have had that I knew nothing about.
As the story was coming together, each little piece that you collected, did you feel more and more excited? Did you start to feel more eager to really follow this through?
I absolutely did. In fact, my husband was a little startled because he had known me going the other way, not only as far from my family, but kind of as far from my Jewish roots as I could go. And suddenly, I almost felt that I was in service to the story, that the story was going to come through, and I really needed to pay attention. And as my friends would tell you, I became obsessed. And periodically, someone would say to me, "Do you think you're a little obsessed?" And I would say, "I think I'm very obsessed." But the odd thing is, it generated interest. And as you will read, it's kind of a mystery. People from all over the world began stepping forward and finding me and playing a role in putting the story together.
I think a lot of people are interested in their own genealogy as well as other people's genealogy. And we see this through, there's television shows, Who Do You Think You Are, whatever that is. We watch, or a lot of people watch. A lot of people want to know. And you can see other people, as they find out about their history, they get very involved in it. It's a big emotional thing. And I think when you were younger, I think it's harder for a younger person to really tap into that. You're all in your own little world. But as you start getting a little bit older, you do want to know, who am I? And who was before me? And what is their story? So I could see how it would be really exciting. And I know you have a degree in anthropology. So to me, this is like a big anthropological dig. You're out there digging for the facts. So your mom in this picture on the cover of the book is 18. She's in Germany. Tell us a little bit, either the story, how she left Germany or some piece.
Well, what I got to learn that surprised me is, as I said, all I had heard was they were lucky to get out early. A lot of us don't realize how early the history of the Nazi party abuses started. I somehow assumed that my mother and my father, but my focus really was my mother, didn't see any of that. That as though one day they saw this leader pack their bags and left. But I discovered that wasn't the case. And I won't go into too much detail, but I found out that the two sisters got left on their own very, very soon after this photo was taken. And that for about 3 years, they wandered around, first feeling very liberated from their parents and then feeling very lost. And that the process of coming to New York, my mother didn't come as a married woman. She wound her way to Palestine, which is a whole other story of efforts to get money out of Germany, which was very difficult. So some relative said, "We'll buy cows and we'll ship them to Palestine. Then when you get there, you can get the money for your cows and use that to go to New York." So the two sisters, Erica and Alice, I learned, went to Palestine. And when they got there, this relative said, "Oh, I'm sorry, your cows died. Only mine survived the voyage." And there were so many stories like that, that I have to say in my family now, when something goes wrong, we look at each other and go, "I guess my cows died." I mean, it's funny. But at the time, I got to see that it was a process of being stripped down from all the things that she had counted on. But she did have some family that had gone ahead to New York, and she was well received. And she did meet up with my father here. And it looks like they had a very romantic year before some more difficulties occurred.
The woman in the photograph, The Search for My Mother's Past, is the book from Monty Feniger. You can find her online at montyfeniger.com. When you finally put the whole puzzle together, or as much as the puzzle as you could piece together, was there one big aha moment where you thought, okay, now I get my mom? Or was that just a process as you were going along going, oh, now that makes sense. Now I get it.
Well, I'm going to make the now I get it even bigger than now I get my mom, because I think the real aha is that we are as much affected by family history we don't know about as we are by the stories that have been passed down to us. And my big aha was how many things from her life had insinuated themselves into my outlook, into my beliefs, into my expectations. And with understanding the actual history, I could kind of unweave that tangle and realize, wait a minute, that was her life and this is mine. So I think the big aha was how important it is to piece that story together, because we're tremendously affected, especially by our mothers, but by our families. And that knowing it is what made me free, not running away from it. And I do understand her a little better, too.
In retrospect, do you feel that you have some similarities with her? You've talked so much about how you wanted nothing to do with her, you didn't. But it's like when you become a parent and you start saying something, you go, oh, wait a minute, where have I heard that? Something my parents said. So any similarities?
All the time. And I hold them now with affection, not trying to run away. And in fact, I think if you look at the book, you'll see that my 20-year search was really a 20-year process of letting go of her and really appreciating her strengths and her resilience and understanding the choices she made, understanding where she became brittle and why. But I also got to see that she had a life once that was fabulous, that she enjoyed herself. And it kind of gave me a little bit more permission to enjoy myself and not just look at the hard run of life.
As other people read your book, do you think they're more interested in looking into their own history?
Always. I've been so surprised at different people, people from very different history, African-American history, Hispanic history, as well as growing up in the Midwest, who tell me that it made them look at the men and women in their photographs and begin to realize that they, too, are part of that history and look into how it's affected them.
Was there one item that was the biggest surprise that you just was way out of left field?
It may sound odd, but my biggest surprise was what a good time my mother had. I found a photo album she made in her teenage years, and she had a very good time once. And I kind of wish she had told me about those trips on the sailboats and on those luxury liners and skiing in Oberhof and all the things she did. It may sound funny, but that was my biggest surprise.
It doesn't sound funny, and I think it's a good reminder to all of us to be sure to tell our kids about all the great times, not just, you know, clear your dishes, make your bed. You know, did you remember to do your homework? So we're not just giving out instructions all the time, but to really sit down and let me show you some pictures from the time when. And yeah, because kids like to know that their parents had a good time.
I think you're right. And they like to know about, not when you're young, but when you get older, understanding the different stages of a person's life, that this person wasn't always your mother or your father. For me, seeing the photographs of her as a young woman just thrilled me. And I knew my mother had suffered, and somehow I feel more whole knowing she also had times when she didn't suffer. And I'm glad to think of her as having had a happy life, too.
I know you have a few book readings coming up here in the Bay Area. Tell us where we can see you.
Well, the next one coming up is Litquake Palo Alto. It's the first time Palo Alto is going to have this literary festival. It's Sunday, August 26th from 3 to 8 p.m. It's free. And I'll be on a panel about writing beyond your comfort zone at 6 p.m. Also, in the coming months, I'll be at Books, Inc. in Berkeley on Wednesday, September 12th. And looking ahead to October, I'll be at Book Passage on Sunday, October 14th.
The Woman in the Photograph, The Search for My Mother's Past, is the new book by Monty Feniger. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz.